and welcome to American Girl Unboxed, the podcast where we dive deep into the stories, styles, crafts, and snacks of the American girls we grew up with. I'm Grace, and today we're wrapping up Claudie's journey with Adventures for Claudie, an American Girl. Joining me to talk about the book today is Victor, and later we'll have Katie on to discuss the doll and extras. This is Editing Grace coming to you with a little correction from our previous episode. While I was editing this episode, for some reason, a thought came to me that I had made a mistake. So Victor had talked about not taking a taxi cab when he was in New York City. And I really just offhandedly said something like, well, there were no taxis in Claudie's time. And I was just really trying to segue, you know, just to Claudie, and honestly didn't think much about it. And as I was editing today, the thought struck me that, oh my goodness, I'm sure there probably were taxis back then. So I double checked, and sure enough, there were. So the earliest form of payment for a ride was pre-1900s. I know in Samantha's mystery book, for example, they pay to have a carriage ride take them to Macy's. But as far as actual taxi, like the taxi company, that was founded in 1907 in New York. So it definitely was around when Claudie was alive and living in Harlem. Anyway, so I just wanted to put that in here. Victor and I and Katie, none of us are historians. We try our best to be factual, but we might make mistakes here and there. I will say whenever we give historical facts at the beginning of an episode, we are almost always getting those from American Girl sources. So whether it's the magazine, the Peek into the Past, or the, you know, Welcome to Addie's World or Welcome to Samantha's World books, that's typically where it comes from. Sometimes we're looking online as well, and we like to often say our sources, but occasionally we'll get stuff wrong, and I'll try to correct it when I can, but wanted to just throw that out there. If you are loving the historical aspect of this podcast, probably most listeners are familiar with Dolls of Our Lives, but that is another podcast that goes through the American Girl books, and it is told by two PhD historians. So you can get definitely a deeper dive into some of that from their lens, which I highly recommend. So definitely check them out if you haven't yet. But now we will go back to our episode. So, Victor, let's start with something that was introduced in 1922, Claudie's year.
Yes.
It is a treat. It's not a candy this time.
But it's still a treat.
It's a treat, and it is a frozen treat. It is a brand.
Okay.
So any guesses as to what frozen treat brand would have been introduced in 1922?
See, frozen treat, I want to say something ice cream, but I don't know. I don't think that's what you have in that bag there. Yes, I did notice. You know, I can't say that I'm as well-versed in frozen treats as I am unfrozen treats, but brand, let's say Ben & Jerry's.
That's a great guess, because that They're is old, also right? one of the only brands I probably know as well. I don't know how old they are, because I think Ben & Jerry are maybe still alive, but I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know. But this one is something you love, and I'm actually, really? I think you're going to love it more than any of the candy we've had so far.
And I should have known.
Well, what would you do for the answer?
Oh my gosh. Everything and anything for a Klondike bar. That's, bring it here, girl. Bring it here. I love Klondike bars.
I don't know about you, but I'm always surprised with the brands that were around for as long as they've, like, I don't know.
Well, Klondike wasn't making, like, Klondike bars back then. Well, because, like, I feel like ice cream and, like, frozen treats, like, they didn't, oh my gosh.
Wait, yes. let me double check, because I feel like it, like, the bars were around in 1922.
Actually, on the wrapper itself, it says, making squares cool since 1922.
Yeah.
Wow. That was certainly something I overlooked with every single square I devoured.
All right, we had an ice cream break just now, and if I sound a little strange in the next couple of minutes, it might be that my mouth is a bit numb. How was your treat, Victor?
As incredible as the last time I had it, which wasn't too long ago, but thank you. That was the perfect treat.
You're welcome. I remember when we first started dating, I remember learning that about you, that you liked these, and they're a treat that I like, but never prioritized purchasing. So like
yeah.
you influenced me to eat them a little bit more often, which I'm thankful for because they are delicious. And I think I didn't give them enough credit.
Do you want to know how like I, because I didn't get into them until like I was much older as a kid. I didn't eat them. But as a kid, I really liked the popsicle sticks version of the Klondike bar, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like an ice cream bar where it's got that chocolate shell over that
ice cream, just vanilla ice cream.
Just vanilla ice cream. And then I was like, it just dawned on me. I was like, Klondike bars, like let me try one. And then like I was hooked from like for like the past 10 years. These are definitely one of my more favorite frozen treats. And yeah, I remember too when we were moving into our apartment, we're like, yeah, we're going to move in together. You were kind enough to like come over to my place to help empty it. And at no shame of mine, I said, you're going to see some things. And sure enough, you saw like just like empty boxes near the trash of Klondike bars. So right there, my secret was out. I'm a Klondaholic.
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention that, but there were quite a few empty boxes.
And I knew
boxes.
You weren't. And so as shamelessly then I now am proud to say I still enjoy them very much.
Yeah, be loud and proud about what you love.
Absolutely. And that's what American Girls has taught me. And that's what Claudia has taught me, is that sometimes you just have to be brave enough to be yourself.
Aw, well, speaking of Claudia.
See how I connected that?
Yes, thank you for that segue. We will talk a little bit about the history of the time period that she was at. And I will say that I'm getting this from The Peak in the Past in her book. And I really like The Peak in the Past that she had in both books because they're really colorful. They're a little bit lengthier than I feel like Samantha's were.
Much lengthier, which I really loved. There's a lot of like substance and just history.
I also feel the way that it's told and laid out is more inviting to children to read versus
agreed
the Samantha ones. Yeah. So I'm just going to pull out a couple of things from here that I was most interested in, although it's all very interesting. So one was talking about all the different writers who came out of Harlem during the Harlem Renaissance. And so just to name a few of them, Langston Hughes was one of them. He was from Missouri, but moved to Harlem and became, you know, a famous writer.
Visited cafes.
Yeah. We'll hear a little bit more
about him. We'll hear more about that.
And then another person was Zora Neale Hurston, who was an author, playwright, and folklorist. And she was from Alabama, but also had some success in Harlem as well. I will say I've read Their Eyes Were Watching God and I really loved that book. So highly recommend if you have not read that book yet. It's definitely a classic that I think most who read it can see why. And then another one that I wanted to mention. So it's talking about stories that were prevalent during this time period. And it mentions Br'er Rabbit, which is a part of the story as well, Claudia's story. And
how do you say that again?
I say Br'er Rabbit.
Okay. I had no idea how to pronounce that. So
I could be wrong.
And then, well, no. Well, later on, I think you're right. But then later on, I think she like, it gets spelled out Briar, or like not the name Briar Rabbit, but like Briar Patch gets mentioned. And immediately it made me think of this song. It's a rap song from back in the day, one that I really like, one that's certainly not, I think, appropriate for children, but I had no idea the meaning that the artist was using and referencing in that song. One song that I really enjoyed, it's got a really cool little like kind of like melancholy, almost downbeat chill melody, and he mentions Briar Patch, and don't throw me in the Briar Patch. And sure enough, it's an exact reference to the African folktale of the Briar Rabbit, which I thought, wow, I had never really truly understood the meaning of that song. So it was really cool to, I think, have this story told to me through the story of Claudia and reimagine a song that I really love and now I cherish more.
And what was that song again?
So the artist is called
Devin the Dude, and the song is called Briar Patch.
Okay.
Where he simply uses his experience growing up in where he's, you know, over policed and the trickster of the Briar Rabbit of don't throw me in the Briar Patch. Like he does and says a lot of the same things, but his Briar Patch means different things that, of course, I don't think are for children, but it just to me was a cool connection that I had never made before historically.
Well, some backstory on Briar Rabbit is that these stories came from America's southern states from Africa in slavery times. And Briar Rabbit represented enslaved people outsmarting their cruel owners.
Yes.
And so I can totally see how learning about that would shed new light on the song you're speaking about. So I'm excited to check out that song.
Oh, it's so good.
I did hear a little snippet of the melody when I walked by you at one point, and that it sounded really cool.
That was the point where I read it in the book, and I was like, whoa. Like, it just, like, floored me. So I was like, I have to listen to the song. And as I listened to the song and I read the lyrics, it was like, oh my gosh, he is totally talking about Briar the Rabbit, or Briar Rabbit.
And before reading this book, the only knowledge I had of Briar Rabbit is from Disney World. So there was a ride called Splash Mountain. Did you go on that? I think you went on that ride.
I did, but I don't remember.
The theme was Briar Rabbit. So he's like trying to escape. I want to say it's like a bear and a fox. And they ended up recently changing that ride to be a Princess and the Frog themed ride, which I'm super excited about. I love Princess and the Frog. Although I loved the original Splash Mountain, apparently the movie that... So it's based off Briar Rabbit, but there was also a movie featuring that character called The Song of the South, which apparently is very racist. And I haven't seen the movie, so I can't speak to it myself or what parts were racist, but that's what I heard. So when I found out that they were switching the ride, I was, you know, it was a little bit bittersweet because I was sad. I loved the original ride, but at the same time, really excited that they were moving away from some of their like racist history and toward something amazing that they've created, which is Princess and the Frog, the movie, which again, I love. So,
yeah. And something that I think Britt Bennett does really well is that, you know, it's perfectly fine to, you know, explore or tell stories of the past of all the good, which she mentions in her interview at the end of the book, which was something that I was really excited to see because I looked back and I was like, did any of these have like interviews from the author? And I looked at the first book of Claudie and there wasn't one from Britt Bennett, but I was happy to see that like, okay, there's going to be one at the end of this book. So at the end of this book, I'll definitely, I can't wait to check that out, but I'll wait until the end, even though I really wanted to just kind of hear her thoughts then. But yeah, it's like she mentions in that in one of her interviews that, you know, you can't just tell about the creativity and the Black Renaissance in Harlem of the Black community, but you have to also tell it with the increased racial violence that was occurring, too. And I thought that is something that she did really well in this book. And it does not surprise me that Disney World decided to, I think, do the same in the fact that, like, yes, it was something that we really appreciated and was part of our history, but it's time to move on. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, but one that I think takes a lot of accountability to actually see through.
Yeah, agree. And I'm glad you read that. I did not read her interview.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But I want to. Yeah, I will definitely.
She speaks. She answers a lot of questions, two in particular, but we can just get to that, I think, after.
Does she talk about Addie in her interview? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I don't think so, no. I don't think Addie was mentioned. It was a lot of really more of like, how do you find yourself relatable to Claudie? Mm. But also like, what inspired you to be a writer? So it was a lot of very personal stuff as well, which I really enjoyed reading.
So something we didn't mention when talking about Meet Claudie is that the end of Meet Claudie does end with a sneak peek at an Addie book. And so does...
Oh, I didn't see that.
So does Adventures with Claudie. Have since learned, since we recorded the first, that Britt Bennett was a huge fan of Addie. And nice. So Addie was, so Victor, I don't know how much you know about her, but she was the doll that came out in 1993 when we were kids. And she was the only black doll who was available.
She was one of your favorites, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. I know you've mentioned her before, but I've not read up on her.
Yeah. And she, I think her stories, from what I remember, are amazing. And I think we will also think that when we read them.
Sweet.
But yeah, she was the only black doll available for a long time. Claudie, fortunately, is not the second one. Like, there's been other dolls in between, thankfully. But I'm glad that Britt Bennett was able to sort of see that full circle of, mm-hmm. like, being a fan as a kid and then being able to create a new character as an adult. That's really awesome.
Absolutely.
Okay, one last thing before we dive into the book. I was recently interviewed for a podcast called Meg's Reading Room, which I highly recommend. It's a very, like, cozy, soothing podcast where the host, Meg, she talks about books that she's been reading. She interviews a bunch of authors. Recently, she interviewed Angela Cervantes, who was the author for Raquel Reyes. So,
oh, nice. Wow.
That's and she's awesome. Had a few American Girl episodes recently. And like I said, she will have one with me soon. But one question that she asked me about, which I find that I was reflecting on today, was how doing this podcast with you as my husband has impacted our relationship or what it has meant to us. And I was just thinking about how today is a good example of why it's so nice to do this with you, because it's a Sunday and we normally record this at nighttime when we put Veda to bed, but today we're doing it during nap time because it's Sunday. And so we have that luxury of having a couple hours in the middle of the day. And I was just thinking about how up until this point of recording, we've barely talked all day, and not because we haven't been interacting or engaging, but you had to shovel the driveway. I was, you know, making food for Veda. I went out and got groceries.
Yeah.
We've just been busy living, you know, doing all the day-to-day stuff. And so it's nice to just have a time to sit down and chat, because we don't always get that, at least not until usually like later in the day. So it's a good excuse to have some quality time with you. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoyed doing this. And that's very kind of you to say. So, and I can't wait to check it out, too, that interview.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, honestly, I highly recommend the podcast, whether or not you listen to the episode I'm on. But she has her voice is just like perfect for a podcast. So
awesome.
Definitely need to check that out. So, okay, let's finally get into
Claudie. Let's get into it. Yes.
The book begins with a map of the trip Claudie and her family take along with the sights on the way to Georgia. So if you remember from the previous book, this book is going to be about Claudie's trip to Georgia to see her grandma and some of her family there. And she's going with her mom. And this trip from New York to Georgia would have taken about 30 hours while going 30 miles per hour.
Oh my God. Have you driven to Georgia ever?
I've driven like through it to get to Florida.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a long trip.
I have driven to Georgia actually as a destination as well, now that I'm thinking about it. But it doesn't take 30 hours because we can drive faster.
Oh, yes, thankfully.
I have taken a 30-hour road trip before when I moved out to Phoenix, but
that is long. Yes. That would still take 30 hours. Back then, it would probably take you a month. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Too long.
And then they, of course, do have the portraits, and we do have a few new faces. So they have like the people. It's interesting because unlike Samantha, they weren't confined to just having two pages of portraits and switching out the portraits to make room. So this one they added new pages. So they kept the portraits from the first book. So I think almost everyone is the same. And then they've just added new ones.
Correct.
So
yeah,
they have a bunch more. So they have Claudie's grandma. They have a few cousins and Irving, who is a new boarder who wants to be an engineer. So we know that we're going to have a new cast of characters for this book.
Yeah. So immediately the portrait, I think, that stood out to me the most was the portrait of Claudie's twin cousins, Ross and Mavis. And I thought, oh boy, do we have Agnes and Agatha 2.0? I can't wait to see what role they play and how they compare to the unforgettable Agnes and Agatha.
Yeah. I didn't make that connection, but yeah, we'll find out.
They left a very lasting impression on me. Let's just say that.
All right, so Claudie is traveling to her grandma's house in Georgia with her mom and cousin, Sydney. While driving, she is trying to think of a sketch for the variety show her and the other tenants are throwing to save the boarding house. Claudie also worries about whether her twin 11-year-old cousins will like her or not. Kind of also reminding me of Raquel's story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Claudie's mom reminds her about the rules in Georgia. Claudie doesn't exactly understand what the rules are, and her mom says she has to be nice and quiet and stay out of trouble.
okay, right off the bat, I was like, oh, this is where we're going.
Yeah.
This is going to be interesting. So, and it was sad, too, to hear her mother have to tell her daughter that, hey, as much as I tell you to, you know, be who you are and, like, achieve what you can achieve, it's very sad. And truly, it's sobering, if anything, the fact that a mother has to tell her daughter that you really need to limit who you are and make sure not to bother anyone and be someone that, you know, is muted in a way just to make sure you come home, which I thought was incredibly humbling, because, you know, we do live in a better world today, but obviously the case may not be the same for everyone. And so it was just a good reminder. And I think I'm excited at this point to see where this goes, especially under the tutelage and creativity that Britt Bennett has brought so far.
Yeah, and I know that there are still conversations like that being had. Like you said, it is better now, but it's horrible that parents have to think about these things. And, yeah, you know, just thinking about some of the violence against Black people that has occurred from police and just people in general. And yeah, those conversations. So I felt the same way as you, like right after that first chapter. Okay, this is going to be maybe a bit of a heavier book than the first, was kind of what I was thinking right away.
Right, same.
All right, so chapter two, Claudie goes over some more rules, like how Cousin Sydney never drives above the speed limit and avoids stopping for gas in certain towns. They tell her about sundown towns, where certain towns outlawed Black people driving through past dark.
I thought right away that, okay, there is going to be more instances where Claudie is going to have her world suddenly appear differently, in the sense that with every encounter that she's going to have, she's going to see new versions of things she's seen in Harlem that for some reason in Georgia just appear so much more differently. And so it's a nice juxtaposition in what she's doing, in what Claudie is going through and seeing, as far as like her world almost being kind of like picked apart and repainted. At the same time, she is still trying to discover who it is that she is and what talent is she really. So it's like this just Molotov of you know, real world, both external and internal struggles, kind of all meeting at once. And I just thought it was fascinating and exciting to read.
Yeah, this book definitely had more suspense for me.
Oh yeah,
than the first. So we'll get into some of that. So yeah, exciting, like you said, difficult, sad, heavy, but also a lot of lightness too, just like the first book. So
yes.
When they finally get close to the grandma's house, their Model T overheats. Mama and Claudie say they will walk the rest of the way since it's not too far. While they walk, Mama tells the story of Br'er Rabbit.
Yep.
And after a while, the sheriff pulls up next to them. So now this is honestly the first point where I felt that suspense of like some fear, some worry, a pit in my stomach. You know, it's a white sheriff. And Claudie's mom puts her hand on Claudie's shoulder as the sheriff asks where they're headed. He calls her Gal, which Claudie does not like, calls the mama Gal.
And I love that she immediately clocked that. I thought that that was cool.
Yes. Yeah. Claudie notices how softly her mom speaks and is finally starting to understand about the rules her mama was telling her about. The sheriff asks where they're from. And when Mama says New York City, the sheriff is disgusted and drives away. Claudie feels scared and questions why anyone would want to live here.
That whole scene, to me, played out masterfully. It was tense, uncomfortable. It was just, it for me, the only way that I could compare it, one of my favorite books is the first Hunger Games, because of just the craziness of it all. First of all, like the Hunger Games, you're picking these two kids that are eventually going to go fight to the death with a bunch of other kids, all in celebration or recognition of something that happened in the past. Well, if you've ever read the book, The Hunger Games, which I know you have, Grace, but if you have not, this book just builds and builds and builds to the very first siren or the very first horn to kick off Katniss Everdeen's experience in The Hunger Games. Britt Bennett did what that book took pages and pages and chapters to build up to that initial horn. I felt that level of anticipation and anxiety in just less than a page's worth of words that Britt Bennett put to page because of just that intense unknowing and uncomfortability and just like us as a reader, maybe like not all readers, I can't say, but like I know for me reading this, I know, and I have seen so many movies, I've heard so many stories, you know, I've read into so much history about what moments like these could ultimately end up into. And so the fact that it was just the way she made the sheriff kind of like this, like, just sly, kind of like, you know, just like shiesty scoundrel, just gallivanting around with this power and kind of like just, you know, okay, I know you're scared, so I'm going to just take my time. And then I'm going to just let you go anyways, but just to know. So what she did in just that few of words was incredible because I felt a pit in my stomach as well.
Yeah. And just making you absolutely hate the sheriff right away. Like that's a lot of skill for an author, right? To be able to set a scene, like you said, in just a page or two that makes you have such extreme emotions. And you know, right away, like I said, it was like, I was like, oh, this book is going to have a different vibe than the first book. So chapter three, when they arrive at their grandma's, Claudia realizes for the first time how difficult it must have been for her mom to not see her own mom for over 5 years. Claudia immediately feels like she knows her grandma, which I thought was so sweet.
Yes. Yes.
And that also makes me think of your family, you know. I know that your family moved, they moved from the Dominican Republic and moved away from family. And that's just a lot to have to, it's hard to even honestly fathom to not be able to see your mother, your own mother for 5 years. That's a long time. I don't know how long your mom had gone, but.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that that's a lot that still happens to this day where, you know, there are folks that move from different countries that are super far away, may not have the means to see each other. Thankfully now you do have the opportunities of being able to maybe chat via video.
Yeah, that's right? True.
Which is great, but still not the same. But it was something that certainly touched a spot in my heart.
Yeah. Well, some things I noted because I was still hopeful that I would cook a recipe for this story, but spoiler, I did not. I didn't have a chance to, but I did note like some of the foods that the grandma was making, which were black eyed peas, okra, smothered pork chops, sweet potato pie, all sounded very delicious. And then Claudia runs outside with the fireflies and her two cousins. And then this is a scene, Victor, that I was mentioning in the last book that I was like, I want to frame this like picture. And just like the whole, it's like felt so magical. And it was such a beautiful image in the book.
Which one?
The one with her and the fireflies and her cousins. Yeah.
This one?
Yes.
So I actually took a picture of this because I looked at it and it is certainly an image that I have to have framed somehow. Because it's just beautiful colors. You have like the darker sky at the top that kind of meets with the lighter orange red glowing sky, but then you have like these like glowing fireflies dancing around, and you just have kids being kids, Claudia at the center, the twins right behind her just like discovering her family in Georgia, a place she's never been, but there's no care in the world. It's all simply just taking it all in. And yes, that image to me is already to the same level of like the most iconic images that I've seen so far. And there's been a lot of really cool images, I think, in these books, but this one, hands down, my favorite.
Yeah. And I think too, just the juxtaposition of this scene with that last chapter and just some people I think will pass. I've heard a lot of people, for example, pass judgments on people who live in different states, for example, who might have different laws. So I'm thinking of some southern states that are maybe more restrictive in certain areas.
Right.
And like, why don't you just move, you know? And this to me was a great example that's like, well, there's the, if you have your family there, your whole life there, your history there, it's not as simple as just moving. And so I think that she did this beautifully where she showed, you know, because Claudia asked, why would anyone live here? And she shows, well, this is why. I mean, there's a lot of difficulty and hardships for some of the people who live there, but there's also this beauty as well. And that's hard to give up.
Exactly. When you hear people say that, like, oh, it's so terrible to live in Detroit or Baltimore, like, why do people still live there? Or even people that live in California and places that constantly get ravaged by fires, or people in Tornado Alley. Like, these are homes for people. People don't understand that home is simply not just the brick and mortar that surrounds you and keeps you warm and safe. If anything, it's attached to history. It's attached to recognition, and being able to know where it is that you are is a comfort that I think echoes perfectly with the same feeling a warm, cozy home does. So yeah. That was a very beautiful scene.
Yeah, I agree with that. And again, just another example of Britt's wonderful writing. Claudia learns that her family has lived on this plot of land since the days of slavery. After the Civil War, Claudia's great-grandfather became a sharecropper and eventually was able to buy some land. Claudia's great-grandpa slept with the deed to the farm under his pillow because people would often steal land from black landowners, which is horrible, and we will get into a little bit more of that coming up.
Yes.
Claudia asks her grandma for a bedtime story. She tells about how people used to have wings but had to shed them on the boats to America from Africa. Finally, one young mother sprouts her wings and flies away, as did others on the plantation, and they flew back to Africa.
I loved hearing that story. Something I really enjoy is like short stories, folklore, folk tales, you name it. Just really fun, quick little stories that have this almost magical component to it. And this one struck me on all accounts. Just the fact that it is a story that I, for me, reminds me a lot of the Polar Express book, where, you know, over time, as you get older and time kind of wears you down, you know, like those that could fly, they forget that they could. They forget that they had the ability to fly, and then suddenly don't fly anymore. But some still do, because some still remember. And that just made me think of the Polar Express, which we read recently, where it's like, you know, not being able to hear the ringing of the bell.
Yeah.
Right. And so as we get older, sometimes we forget about where we started.
Yeah. Read recently, as in three times a day, every day for the last 2 weeks.
And the movie, yes.
Beta's current obsession.
Obsessed.
Yeah. And I also just loved that scene for the showing the bond already between Claudia and her grandma. I thought that was so sweet.
Same. Agreed.
Chapter 4. The next morning, Claudia helps on the farm and her cousins teach her how to climb a tree. Claudia and her mom go to the store for some treats and a souvenir for her brother, Jody. Mama tells her to hurry so the shopkeeper doesn't think they're stealing. When they make their purchases, he glares at them and slaps their change down, making some pennies fall to the floor. Claudia goes to pick them up, but Mama tells her to leave them. When they're outside, she says, "Your dignity is worth more than a few pennies."
Wow. It's a huge, huge quote there. Wow, one that weighs heavily.
Yeah. As they're driving home, Cousin Sydney points to the charred remains of a farm. They speculate about whether it was an accident or set on fire on purpose. They check in on the family, who are all physically okay. The patriarch says people have been trying to run them out of the county or worse, then points to the trees. Another moment that gave me a pit, right?
Is, right, yeah.
Can you, like, just that fear that they must live in every single day.
Every single day, not knowing that, you know, what you own may not be yours tomorrow. Like, to not have that comfort, to know that you have to sleep with your deed under your bed, like, or under your pillow, like, that is, it's not a way that any person deserves to live. And so even in a world that may tell you it's fair, it's not. And so it was again, just these are going to be tougher chapters, but important chapters, because right now Claudia is being shaped brutally honest, which I think will always aid in making a much more impactful and long-lasting arc for the character of Claudie.
Well, and this does impact Claudie, and she then eavesdrops on her mom and grandma talking, which I did think about how, just thinking of comparing her to Samantha, and Samantha would never eavesdrop. They're just they're different characters, but I think both great in their own ways.
Absolutely.
And but anyway, while she's listening, she hears her mom scold her grandma for not saying anything about the burning farms. So this is something that, you know, her grandma had, I think, withheld so that her daughter wouldn't worry, which I think a lot of moms would probably do.
Oh, 100%. And we'd later learn how Claudie's mom experiences the same thing that Claudie's mom's mother is experiencing now in that tough conversation where the daughter is kind of scolding the mother of, hey, you know, you should have told me this. Well, let's see where we wear this hat later down on the chapter. And it's just well done. It's a beautiful family dynamic, even as tough as it is there. It's like just it's such a rich, rich family story that Britt Bennett is putting to paper so far.
Yes. And I think that's one reason why, spoiler, I do love this book a lot, because I love when books are, you know, focusing on family and the ties of family.
Yes.
Chapter 5, in their last days at the farm, Claudie tries to write her sketch and also notices her mom acting funny. She's asking questions about boll weevils and carrying her little reporter notebook around.
Real quickly, boll weevils, did you look them up?
I did not, did you?
I did, but I quickly stopped. But the Muppets, do we know what Gonzo is?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't.
If you look up what a boll weevil is, they have like the exact same nose as Gonzo. I don't want to. What he is.
I don't want to think of him like that.
I know. But just a little fun fact there for you.
Maybe he is. Oh, my goodness. All right. So Claudie is sad, thinking about leaving her grandma, and asks if her grandma will move to Harlem with them. She says that keeping their land is important and tells Claudie she'll always have a place to come home to. Claudie and her cousins go to the fair. Her mom disappears, which makes Claudie realize she's reporting on the fire.
Right there, I thought, this woman is brave, because she lives in Harlem. She has family in Georgia, but she is out here trying to uncover a very dangerous... I mean, she's going after people that are burning people's houses down, so they can be capable of anything.
Yes.
And it made me think, man, what a cool potential like outlier story could be is a collaboration between her and Cornelia and trying to like right a wrong, especially during that time. And I'd be curious to know like how they'd get along, like how their conversations would be and what they would be passionate in trying to right.
Yeah, Cornelia would be the elder in that scenario. Totally she elder. Would be 20 plus years now down the line.
Yep.
So Claudie looks for her mom and sees her talking to one of the family members who owned the farm that caught on fire. Claudie gets mad that her mom is potentially stirring up trouble, kind of what you were talking about with Claudie's mom being mad at the grandma. Mm-hmm. And so Claudie creates a plan to catch her mom in the act. Chapter 6, that night, Claudie and her cousins wake to the sound of Mama's footsteps. While Mama is warming up the Model T, Claudie and her cousins sneak into the back of the truck and hide under burlap sacks. I will say, one thing that I wished that this book had the time to do, and I understand why it didn't, was develop the cousins a little bit more.
I know. So at this point, they are not Agnes and Agatha. They're more pleasant, I think.
Yeah.
As much as fun and like cool and out there Agnes and Agatha were, they definitely didn't play as prominent of a role. And one that I wasn't like, I think, too disappointed at. So like for me, honestly, there is a lot to write about in this book. So for me, I didn't feel as disappointed, but they certainly, in comparison to Agnes and Agatha, where I kind of thought they were going to go, they did not.
Yeah, they don't have the same vibes at all.
No.
All right, so in the back of the truck, Claudie struggles with feeling disappointed in her mom, and then they turn down the road that leads to the burned down farm. Mama gets out and Claudie follows after, getting her attention. Before they can talk, they see headlights coming toward them. Claudie's mom puts Claudie back under a burlap sack in time for the sheriff to arrive. And this is another moment, I don't know about you, Victor, where I was on the edge of my seat, very nervous.
Yeah, because it was not the time to be out and black, right? Where this is not the town where you're free to move about when it's dark out, because it is a, you know, a sundown town, or however it was referenced.
Well, especially being caught at the farm where there was the fire, yeah, which like was very suspicious, you know?
Right. And who knows who's in on it and who's protecting who. And so, yeah, I immediately just, again, got to that pit of my stomach and got to that real like anxious point of like, please be okay after this.
Yeah. And I think about like stories or like movies I've watched where the head of the KKK is the sheriff of the town and all that. Yeah. And it's like, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
And clearly he's not a good dude just from the snippets we've seen of him.
That's right.
So the sheriff said he heard someone was going around asking questions. Mama says she wasn't, and she only stopped because she thought she hit something. The sheriff tells her to leave, so she does immediately. Back at the farm, Mama is mad at Claudie for following her. Claudie says she was worried about her. Mama says she doesn't have to explain anything to Claudie, which shocks and hurts her. Claudie replies, "You're going to make things worse and you don't even care. You just want to see your name in the paper."
Ooh. Oh, man. That was a javelin thrown from a mile away, but coming at her with speed. Claudie, that was a little bit too much, but I understand her frustration. I do. Now, that
she's
conversation,
scared.
She's super scared for herself, for her mom, I think, mostly. It's just like that it was that kind of like indirect shot fired, because it was, you know, she was super upset and super scared. And so she went ahead and jabbed her with like, "Oh, you're just doing this for the press and glory." And it was like, "No, obviously not. But right now I just need to yell at you because I'm upset and you need to know it." And it was such a, I think, telling depiction of what that parental and like child's or, you know, son-daughter relationship can be, where for me, it made me just think of like, there is going to be a point where Veda is going to hold us accountable to, "Hey, you said we were going to do this if I did this, right?" And then if we don't, she's going to hold us to the firing squad and say, "Why didn't you follow through like you said you would?" Right? And it's, reading this, I felt more for her mom. Mm. And I thought, would I feel the same reading this in middle school? Mm. I don't know if I would. I don't think I would. I think being a parent now just makes me feel more connected to kind of the tough situations that, as a parent, when you're trying to instill great values in your child, but you almost have to simultaneously do it in an imperfect world where things come to come at you and you're not going to be as perfect as you try to portray to your children. Because I mean, not that we are, but like, we at least have to try to let them know that they can count on us. And sometimes that can be taken as like, my parents are perfect, when we're not. Not that kids say that all the time about their parents. It's just our dream. But it's tough. And so it was just fascinating dynamic portrayed in that scene for me.
Well, and I know I also was relating to the mom more, but I know I was relating to Claudie in the sense of, I've had moments where I have said something very mean when I was hurt or upset and immediately regretting it. And afterward feeling like, and that's how Claudie feels. She's like, okay, the moment she says it, she knows what she said wasn't true. And she says that she thinks that she's never said anything that cruel to her mom before. And she like immediately feels a sense of regret.
Yeah, and which I really love the beginning of the next chapter because of all of this.
Well, so let's get to that. The next morning, Claudie and her mom apologize to each other. Her mom says that sometimes she is trying to help, but puts people in harm's way. And sometimes the bravest thing you can do is survive.
And I love this because it gives an example to younger readers that you can have tough conversations and you can say things that hurt, But what's really important is really not what was said prior, but what you say after. And how accountable are you to the mistakes that you made? And so seeing that both Claudie and her mother were both apologetic, like no one said you need to apologize and keep it kind of one way. It was very two way in mm-hmm. that like shared, you know, empathy toward one another. And I thought that was beautiful. And so to go from where it ended, and it was just like, it was such a heart-wrenching ending for me, the previous chapter. And then to start it the way that it was like so hopeful. So well done.
Hopeful, yes. And I agree, like I loved seeing that strong relationship they have where they immediately made up. And I do think like everyone says don't go to bed angry, but honestly I think sometimes you should, because you need to sleep on it. And then but as long as you talk about it right away the next day, like I think it's just like the main point is don't ignore things for too long.
Exactly.
And so I do love that they, you know, it clearly shows their strong and mature relationship that they have with each other. I will say though, I see what you mean by this being like a hopeful beginning to the chapter, but I also, it's a little bittersweet too, because that line where Mama says the bravest thing you can do is survive, like that definitely is true. And I totally agree with that and think that sometimes not everyone needs to fight the fight, whatever the fight is. And sometimes you need to just survive. And like, and it's sad to think about, because I think about how many situations, even currently, people are in where it's like you might want to go out and protest about XYZ, or you might want to do this or that. But if you're risking your life or your family members, or it's just the risk is too great, sometimes the bravest thing you can do is just do what you can to survive and get through.
Yeah. And you can't, you know, ignore that fact whatsoever. I think for me, the hope came in the sense that both her mother and Claudie unlayered themselves in a way that made them more connected so that in future instances, they might be better bonded to meet whatever challenges they face stronger together, just having gone through this now. But obviously, who knows what the world will throw at them later on. But it was just nice to see that they were able to bond closely through adverse, you know, less than pleasant situation.
Well, and to further that bonding, her mom does open up to Claudie a little bit, and she talks about when she was young.
That was huge.
Yeah, she tells the story about how when she was young, she saw a man hanging from a tree, and she says that that was the reason she left home and went to go become a writer in Harlem.
Unbelievable.
Claudie tells her mom that she wants to be a writer too, but she's not brave like her. Her mom tells her she is brave and that she doesn't need to write like her. Claudie doesn't have to write things as they are, but as she wants them to be.
And yeah, and again, it's just like they are, you know, having put their dukes up in the previous chapter to end, where they're both just like, and to be fair, like Claudie's mom wasn't like, she could have yelled back at her when, but she was like, just go to bed, right? Yeah. So like they were very peaceful, but like it was still very contentious. But again, just they are putting their defenses down and really getting to just like know each other in, I think, a much more meaningful way than it can be sometimes with like familial bondings, where it can be on the surface, but sometimes you have these like very raw moments that it's like if you've ever made pottery in art class, I remember one of the techniques is like you have to, it's called kneading, I believe, where like you scratch lines before you layer on the next line of the, like, because you need those scars and scratches to bond the two pieces together before you move on. And so I think that that is just a form of what's happening here between Claudie and her mom. And one part that I thought was super sweet is Claudie asked her like, hey, so that story about the hanging man, like, why did you tell me that? And Claudie's mom says, because I want you to know me. And I thought, beautiful.
Yeah, that was, I agree, that was very beautiful. And I love your analogy of like the scratching and sticking two things together.
You know how my brain works. I just sometimes see pictures in my head of past, present, and they all collide. And yeah.
And that unlocked a memory for me because I took art class senior year and we had to do, and I hated pottery. I was just like terrible at it. But I do remember doing that method.
Couldn't get on to the next roll, the next snake roll for your, you know, bowl or whatever we were making until you made those scratches. I made clay pancakes that made it into the art show. So
really?
That tells you, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah.
That was actually smart, though, to make pancakes.
I know. People didn't see. They just.
I tried to make a pyramid and it was terrible. It was terrible.
Safe to say, we don't do pottery anymore.
No. All right. So that night, Grandma tells Claudie about Briar Rabbit. Claudie asks her if her story about the people flying could have been true a long time ago. Her grandma says, that's the power of a story. Just because something didn't happen doesn't make it any less true.
I was so happy to see that this is where Claudie's mind was, that it was talking about these flying people, because I thought that was a part earlier in the book that just had so much like life to it to me. It was something that I wanted to see played out, whether in a play, in a longer story, in its own movie. And so the fact that it came back, I thought, okay, what are we going to do with this? I still don't know, but I was excited that it was being played a part because I know that she was still trying to figure out what her final sketch was going to be. And I thought, man, would this be a cool story to tell in her own way?
Well, Claudie does leave the next day to go home, and she leaves knowing what she wants to write. So
yes, because at the end of that chapter, she's like startling her and like, what's going on? And then nope, nothing. She just begins to write.
So chapter 8, Claudie arrives back home and it's like she never left. There is a new boarder, however, named Irving, who wants to be an engineer. She meets him and asks him for help on something for the variety show. Claudie tells her brother stories that night and thinks about how telling someone a story is an act of love. For the variety show, she had wanted to write a love letter to Harlem. Mm.
And boy, did she. Something that really quickly, right away, you could tell her coming back that this is a different Claudie. This is a Claudie that has really matured. One thing that stuck out to me is that it was written that she had once believed that you were either born with talent or you weren't, but then starts listing how all her different boarders had talents that didn't originate from the very beginning. And so really starts honing in on like, it's okay that I haven't figured it out yet because I'm still on my way. Just to know that she has that awareness now just makes her for a much more powerful Claudie, which was cool.
Yeah. And she takes that newfound power and she uses it to be the leader of this variety show.
And did she step up? Like, she was like, and that was the thing too that I really admired about Claudie, is that she faced adversity in a way that, like, I mean, what other American girl has to try and solve the eviction of an entire building, which that is not something that I think an adult could handle very well, let alone an 11-year-old girl.
Right. So she has all the performers practice at the variety show. She realized how everyone was looking to her for direction, and so she took charge.
Yes.
Gwen had completed a backdrop for the play and asked Claudie if she was going to hold up her end of the bargain to perform in the play. Claudie says she wrote something but isn't sure it's good. Mm. Gwen asks Claudie if she likes her story and thinks it's good. Claudie says she thinks so, and Gwen tells her that nothing else matters then, which we kind of had some of that in the first book about like hobbies and stuff, or like doing things, talents. And it's like, if you're enjoying it, then it doesn't matter how good or not good it is to other people.
Yeah, absolutely. And Gwen just nailed it out of the park with that advice. And I think it's something that she does take to heart and acts accordingly, having now received that advice.
Yeah, Gwen has been in these two books. So remember, she's one of the boarders who's a little bit intimidating, not really a kid person. And she has definitely been sort of a mentor to Claudie during these two books,
yes,
which has been great. And later we're going to see Miss Amelia, who, remember, is the woman who runs the boarding house. And she says she wishes Claudie didn't have to spend her whole summer working on the problems of grownups. Claudie says she wants to because Miss Amelia is family and they hug. Claudie asks Miss Amelia to make her a costume for the show. That's how chapter 8 ends. And that does speak to that part of, like you said, like Miss Amelia is recognizing that this child is trying to solve adult problems.
Right.
And like you said, a lot of adults wouldn't be able to, but kudos to her for trying, right? Even if it doesn't work, she's trying, and that's what matters.
Exactly.
Chapter 9, Claudia and her brother put up posters for the show. They hang one at Angelo's bakery where their dad works. Claudia asks her dad what will happen if nobody shows up. Her daddy assures her that all the boarders will be there, plus their friends, at the very least. She says she just wishes she weren't afraid all the time. Her dad says she just needs to learn to do things that scare her and that there's nothing wrong with being scared because it just means you care, which I loved that because I try to remind myself sometimes, I forget where this came from, but just that idea of maybe it's from The Lion King, like being scared is okay. And that's like where bravery comes from. Like you can't be brave if you're not scared.
Right. Being brave doesn't mean that you have no fear. It's the exact opposite. Like it means that you are super afraid, but yet still have the courage and the bravery to, you know, put that fear aside to accomplish a task or a goal.
Yeah, exactly. So I try to remind myself that sometimes. Claudia musters the courage to walk to the coffee shop across the street and invite the writers who work there. And if you remember in book one, we did mention this briefly, that she, Claudia, notices like this group of writers in the coffee shop across the street. And so when she goes over there, they're all very encouraging to her and they all say they'll go, which I thought was very sweet. Like I could just picture these sort of like too cool for school writers in a coffee shop.
Right.
And
like here comes this little girl. Like we don't got time for this.
But yeah, they're super warm and welcoming and encouraging to her, which was amazing.
This was a cool callback from book one to me. There was a really cool description that her dad tells Claudia of like these men, you know, when they're just kind of like not writing but staring out into the distance, that means they're hard at work. And I thought, huh, that was really cool. So these guys must be some like really creative people, writers. And so that stuck to me. And so when they, and this is a very short chapter, but when they mentioned like, oh, look at, and he starts like, be brave and go talk to them, like go tell them that you are putting the show on. I thought, yes, this is awesome. This is great. This is a short, sweet chapter, but an important one because of who it is she is able to meet there.
Yeah, so this was like a fun little surprise. So her dad says that people are saying one of the writers in the coffee shop will be big someday. He dropped out of engineering school and is still figuring things out. And then he mentions the name and it's Langston Hughes.
I knew they were going to go with Langston Hughes because he's such a big part of Harlem, the Black Renaissance. Like he's a very, very renowned poet and writer. So I thought that's might be who they're setting up, right? It's like a little Easter egg of like a true historical figure kind of pitted in this fictional world created by American Girl. So that was a cool drop. Probably one of my favorite parts.
Yeah, and I don't know that American Girl, I'm trying to, we'll have to keep an eye out to see if they do that kind of thing regularly. I can't remember. I think probably when I was a kid reading, I didn't know who a lot of the historical figures were. So if they did, I probably just didn't realize. So
yeah, I think they've mentioned historical figures, but to have an actual historical figure
in the
interact
story.
With one of the American Girls, I thought, I don't think that's happened before. And so I really enjoyed that because he was so nice and he was like, you know, soon I'll be, you know, probably reading you, or like he was like, hey boys, you got anything planned tonight? It was like, yeah, bring them all, please. So that was cool.
Yeah, it was nice to see how kind he was in the story. All right, so chapter 10, our final chapter. It's the night before the performance and Claudia can't sleep. She sits on the staircase thinking about her grandma and the show. Her mother comes home and makes Claudia some warm milk. She says she's proud of her for working so hard on the show. Claudia tells her mom that maybe it doesn't matter what she's good at, but what matters is what you share with the people you love. And like, I feel like her dad was sort of trying to teach her that in the first book a little bit.
Yes.
And it seems like it sort of finally drove home in this book.
It was a great way of the author kind of bringing back that initial lesson in the beginning and close it off by like, she's understanding now more so. And it's just kind of giving the reader confirmation that that's where we're at from the beginning.
So Claudia arrives at the Elks Lodge where the show will be. There is a line wrapped around the block. In the middle of the show, Gwen tells Claudia they've sold enough tickets to save the boarding house. And this chapter honestly is pretty short, even though it's the climax and it's the show. Yeah. It's like, we don't get a lot of detail other than, you know, she gets that good news that the tickets have sold enough, which is amazing. And then the very last part, and I will say this made me tear up, and I haven't teared up since Samantha's books. So it was a little bit of honestly like a welcome event for me, but the very last part of the book, Claudie goes on stage to tell her story. She tells her grandma's story about the people flying away, only instead of flying to Africa, they all fly to Harlem to be together.
I agree. I think that that was a very heartfelt moment in such a beautiful way to have this girl who for this entire journey, she is she is confronting both internal and external forces, conflicts, where she's trying to figure out internally, like, who she is. Externally, she's realizing the world is not as perfect, all while trying to save the eviction of basically all of her family and friends at the borders. And the fact that, you know, through it all, she was able to grow, she was able to learn, and she was able to find her voice in telling a story that combined both her Harlem past and present to her new, you know, family she met in Georgia and what all that entails, but also done through a tale as old as time with the story that her grandma told her about the flying people. And so she has a true passion now for writing. If not, then she is just super talented and is going to do amazing things. But it was just a really cool kind of send off to the reader of like, this was why it took two books to really tell this story. And I thought it was done so well. And I really enjoyed just like her version of this folklore where instead of flying to Africa, they flew back to Harlem and kind of just really sealing off the combination of those two worlds.
Yeah. And I think a really sweet way that they ended it, or that Britt ended it, is the image of Claudie soaring over the stage. She's wearing a harness that the engineer Irving created for her. And it was just a sweet way, I think, to complete Claudie's journey and to show her flying free and in her home of Harlem with the people she loves. So
yeah, Laura Freeman, the illustrator, absolutely knocked it out of the park. And she did two-page illustration of her and the wings and being raised. It's like, it was so cool.
Agree. So we will do a media pairing, but before we get to that, Victor, what would you rate this book overall?
Easy. Can I do 10 out of 5? No. It's out of 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
I will give it a strong and resounding 5 out of 5. This closed it up nicely. It was hard. It was, this one to me had more kind of struggle. I mean, like the first one was really good and I really enjoyed it. And so I think maybe if I had to, I'd probably would change the first book to 4 just because of like the richness and depth that this had. And so, yeah, this is an easy 5 out of 5 for me. And like, if you were to look at both of these books as like a part one and a part two, it was just very, and my, can I do a meeting pairing now?
Sure.
I have to say that these books reminded me of Godfather Part 1 and Godfather Part 2.
Okay.
Godfather Part 2 is often referred to as one of the few sequels that outdid the first. Mm. And both are masterpieces. Both I enjoyed really. Both I really enjoyed. But the second one, the Godfather Part 2, was just like, it had more richness in the story being told because of the layers that were put in the second one as opposed to the first. Where in the second one, you have a duality of stories where one is being told in the present time, one is being told in the past. This one didn't do it the exact same way, but the fact that we were almost being told a story that has been happening for a while by learning about everything that happens in Georgia, but also knowing of the past that Claudie's mom had gone through. And then with everything then coming back to Harlem and resolving all of the issues, like it was just such a rich second part, this book than the first because of all that was a part of it as opposed to the first. So strong out of five for me. And, not at all the same stories, but as far as like the feeling I got after reading both, just super well done. That would be my media pairing.
Yeah. And I'm curious to know, before I give my media pairing and my rating, how do you feel overall, Claudie's books versus Samantha's books? Which one would you prefer if you had to say?
Are there only two books for Claudie?
Mm-hmm.
There are. So we finished Claudie?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. What was the question again? So what do I think the difference is? I mean,
like overall, like what do you think is, yeah, if you had to, I mean, you clearly love both.
I do. I really do love both. I think for me, Claudie, the two books being both so, it's basically one story, a part one and part two, felt like a miniseries that told one story and told it really well.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Samantha, I enjoy TV shows, whether they're a miniseries or whether they have seasons after seasons. I felt maybe Samantha was more of like a just traditional TV series where, you know, each episode will have its problem and then its solution. Whereas this one was the same story, but being told through longer segments, right? Or through, or just through segments, period. Samantha had some of that where some things did bounce back. I bet you Nellie would have been involved more heavily in Claudie's books. But maybe I'm just still harping on the fact that we should have had more Nellie in the Samantha series. Like, do you want me to rate like which one I like more or just...
Like overall, which one would you pick?
Claudie.
Really?
Yeah, I would. I much enjoyed the story told in these two books because, like, I enjoyed Samantha's stories a lot. But I mean, this one for me just felt like it was more complete in the sense that it was one story told in two parts.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Samantha books we read, what, six?
Mm-hmm.
They were, you could read those books almost separately without having to read the others, in my opinion.
I see what you're saying. So this felt like a more complete, or like almost a longer story, even though there's only two versus six because they connected. Well, it's nice to hear that you liked Claudie so much. I agree. This was a 5 out of 5 for me, and the first book was a 4 out of 5. So overall, loved this series. Again, I said this in the first one, but like you have to read them both. Like you can't just read one of them.
Yeah.
And I do have a media pairing, actually, one that I haven't read, but it's my mom's media pairing because she listened to the first book and she immediately thought of this book. So I wanted to share it. And it is an author I do know and have read. So it is The Watsons Go to Birmingham, 1963 by Christopher Paul Curtis. And I have read a few books by this author. I read Bud Not Buddy and I know I've read a couple more. You know that one?
Bud Not Buddy. Okay.
Yes. And he's a very famous children's book author. He is a Newbery Award winning author. This book actually won the Newbery. And basically the story, again, I haven't read it, but my mom had and she loved it. My sister also, I remember they read it when I was little. And I was like, no, I don't want to read historical fiction. So I never read it. But
well, you're going to now.
Yeah, honestly, I'm very intrigued to read it. And it's about this family who travel from Flint, Michigan. To go to Alabama. And this is also during the time of the bombing that occurred at the church in Birmingham.
Oh, wow.
So definitely some very heavy content in this, but you can see how it parallels to the book we just read.
Absolutely.
So if you want more of this content, or I think this would totally be a great one. A lot of the media pairings we do are not suitable for children, but this is definitely one that if you were to read Claudie with your child, that you could pair The Watsons Go to Birmingham with it just to get more history of the South and Black Americans in the South. And I think that, and some of the tragic history that goes with it. But I feel like that, from what I've heard, Christopher Paul Curtis does a great job of balancing the lightness with the heaviness, just like Britt Bennett did. So,
yeah. And Godfather 1 and Godfather Part 2 just has nothing to do with anything of this. But so you don't have to read or watch this with your kids. And I strongly suggest that you don't.
No, but maybe on your own
in the future.
If you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up our conversation. And now we will move on to Katie. Hello, Katie.
Hello.
How did you like Adventures with Claudie?
I liked it. I thought it did a really good job of really just wrapping up Claudie's kind of introduction and story. And I feel like she learns along the way kind of the lessons introduced in the first book about just like the enjoyment of being around other people and like soaking up a present moment and working hard and, you know, finding that passion and all of those things together. I think just it did a really good job of. I did feel like it was a little rushed with all of the things going on with the trip and then having to go back to Harlem and do the rent party show and talent show. And kind of wrapping up all of those storylines and conversations. But I did love that she found her like storytelling ability and that she incorporated her grandma's story about the people flying away at the end and just bringing that back to Harlem. And I love that they all just like fly back to Harlem. Like that's such a great tie-in. So I loved it. I think I'd probably give it 4 stars just because the pacing felt a little bit off.
Okay.
Or I didn't feel as like, I think I wasn't as maybe intrigued with some of the storylines going on, but overall I thought it was a really great story.
And you gave the first 5 stars, correct?
Yes, I did.
You and I are opposite.
Yeah.
I did
okay.
four
you
than
did
five.
Five. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Which I think honestly, my biggest critique of either book is the fact that it's sort of a weird setup as far as it being split into 2 books. Like,
yes.
And we talked about, I mean, we're probably people listening are like, you know, make up your mind. Because I think with Raquel, we were like, let's split this into 2 books. But I think it just, it was a little bit of a unique way to tell this story.
Yes.
Split into 2 books. And so I also agree with that. Although I did, the second book worked better for me personally.
Yeah.
Which I think the biggest reason is probably the setting. Just from growing up north, I do prefer books, I think, that are set in the country. And
yeah.
So I really liked that idea. And like being with her grandma, I thought was so sweet. And I agree with you, though. Like, I think there was a lot going on, and I would have loved to have just a full book of her there and like getting
right.
to know her cousins better and her grandma better and the history. Like, this sounds like there's some very rich history from their family that would be worth exploring. So,
yeah, it's almost like with Raquel, there were 3 stories crammed into 1 book.
Yeah,
I thought. And then with Claudie's, it was like 1.5 stories in 2 books. Like,
yeah.
The trip to Georgia felt like it could be expanded upon. We could have learned more about her family, been introduced to more characters, learned more of their backgrounds, or just had more interaction with them in a second book. And that would have been completely great going in. I was re-listening to our first Claudie last night, and you said there's a picture you want framed in your house. I'm going to guess that it's the fireflies.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. It's just
course.
Such a good illustration. If you guys have to look it up online or anything, please do, because it is a beautiful illustration of Claudie and her cousins just running through the fields, and the colors are amazing, and it's just, it is kind of childhood, I feel like, embodied in an image.
Yes, and it's very whimsical and beautiful.
Yes.
Totally, that was the one I was thinking of. There's a lot of
great
pictures.
That'd be a great poster.
Yes. All right, I do have one other random question that I'm going to throw at you, which is if you, okay, so thinking of the original 6-book arc that the original girls have, if you had to pick, if Claudie could get 1 last book, would you want it to be in the style of like the Lessons for Claudie? Like Claudie Surprise?
Claudie Surprise.
Happy Birthday, Claudie. What would you choose?
I think I would either choose Claudie's Surprise or Changes for Claudie.
Yeah.
But I feel like her Meet book was almost a little bit like a change book, mm-hmm. too. And I don't know if Christmas time being right now is just influencing my answer, but I would just love to see Claudie in like the winter, and some sort of holiday connection or tie-in. Yeah, I think that'd be really cool to see. And she already has a winter set that we talked about the last time. That's just so cute. So it'd be fun to see that like incorporated into her story as well.
Agree. And her book, I think Britt Bennett does a great job. We've talked about this, of like balancing the light with the dark, and like having, there's heavy stuff, but there's a lightness to this story as well. Mm-hmm. And I think she does a great job with that. But I think that what would be neat about a Claudie Surprise book is that it could maybe just be completely light and just like happy, and like maybe that could be a book where it's like there's no one getting evicted and it's just focusing on, and like again, Britt does a great job of doing this, but I loved Samantha's book because it was so cozy and there was hardly any conflict, and it was kind of just nice to have a little piece of that. And so I love the, like, I honestly like learning about, you know, the hard times and the conflicts and things like that, and that's kind of what I think makes these historical books stand out in comparison to some other books. But it would just be nice, I think, to have that like little cozy book of, you know, what does her Christmas look like. And
I know, and I'm feeling like even with Angela's Bakery, like tying it could be like a whole cookie themed book, like maybe she's doing a Christmas cookie exchange in class. I don't know if that was a thing in 1922, but I feel like it could just be like so cozy and tied in.
Yeah. The conflict could be just something between her and Nina, her friend, or, you know,
who's going to have the best cookie. I don't know.
Yeah, totally. I agree. That's what I would probably choose too. Okay. So I do have a media pairing for us.
Amazing. What is your media pairing?
My media pairing is The Trees by Percival Everett. Have you heard of this book?
I have not.
I think Claudie being in Georgia with her family is what made me think of this. This book is set in Mississippi. This book is much darker than Claudie's book. And it's basically, you know, if you're kind of going to take the toughest aspects of her books and put it into a book for adults, that's what The Trees would be. So basically the plot, again, it's set in Mississippi and a bunch of people are showing up brutally murdered. And at their murder scene is a mysterious second body, which appears to resemble Emmett Till. So if you remember the tragic, you know, what happened to Emmett Till, this story really takes that and goes further with it. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, a very heavy and in some parts horrific story to read, but it's told really well. Percival Everett is a wonderful author. A lot of people might know him from his book James, which blew up this year. So he has like a bestseller from this year called James. And then one of my favorite books ever is his book Telephone, which is about a man who is grappling with his daughter who has a terminal illness. And he finds a note in a coat that says help. And it's like from the factory where the coat is made. So he tries to figure out what's going on. And the book has like three different versions that you don't know which one you get until after you're reading it.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah. So I definitely recommend any of his books. The Trees is probably one of the more violent of the three, has some graphic imagery, but it is also very good. And it just, I think the scenes, especially with Claudie, with the sheriff, like I felt a lot of fear when I was reading those. And it made me think of this book specifically because of, you know, the worry that her mother had, the very real fears that she had bringing Claudie to Georgia, and then the events that took place there, and basically, you know, how they ended up leaving and her mom decided not to explore the story right. that she was exploring because of safety, which was a very valid choice. And so anyway, it just reminded me of this book, The Trees. I recommend it. But again, go into it. If you're worried about trigger warnings, definitely look into those before reading.
Yes.
OK, do you want to move on to talk about, we did not do a snack or a craft, but do you want to talk about some ideas that you have if someone did want to pair this book with a snack or a craft?
Yeah. So Claudie's, I feel like set and accessories just really give way to a lot of different recipes. And in particular, she comes with Angelo's Bakery as a piece of her collection. It came out in 2022 and is still sold. Retail cost was $2.95 and is now $3.25. So really kind of an investment or like just special piece.
Wait, it started at $1.95 and now it's $3.25?
$2.95 to $3.25.
Okay, yeah. They had
$30.
But still, they did a big hike in like $30 increase in almost all their stuff recently, yes. Like $10 to $30.
Yeah. But honestly, this is one of the most robust sets I've ever seen. From a doll, especially a historical character. And so Angelo's Bakery, I'm not going to list everything that comes with it because it's a 51-piece set, but it comes with like a backdrop, including a cabinet. The backdrop says Angelo's Bakery. It's got a little brick at the top, and then everything is in this really bright teal mint green color. So it goes really well with Claudie's outfit and her set in general, and is very 1920s. And then the set also comes with a cart, a stand, a display case, cash box, like any baking tool you could think of, from like an oven paddle to bowls to a flour sifter. And then it comes with so many treats. So if you are going to do any recipes, there's like a cake roll. We talked about lemon cake and fritters last time. Chocolate cake, sweet potato pie, pineapple upside down cakes, pretzels, bread, baguettes. There is literally like everything that you could potentially think of in this display case for a bakery. So it's such a great set, and I would say like any of those recipes would be really great to try, especially if you love baking.
Yeah, I know one that I was wanting to, because we were doing Claudie's first book around Thanksgiving,
yeah,
and I was thinking sweet potato pie would be so perfect, but yes, I just don't have a working oven, so I wasn't, you know, most of this stuff, I think I picked the one thing that I could make on my stove, which was, yes, the coconut fritters. So I think those are all great options. I think there's so much you could do if you were wanting to make this into a little activity with your child or just by yourself or mm-hmm. whatever. And another thing that I was thinking of and I was planning to do, but honestly, just with the holidays, I feel like I just don't have the time. And if I was to make this, I would want to put a lot of time into it and make it nice. And that's like a puppet theater for Veda. Yes. So Claudie has a puppet theater, and she has, I think, four puppets. She has like a pig and a cat, and I forget what else, but she puts on little shows for her little brother. And I think it would be really fun for Veda to have one. And I thought about trying to make her one for Christmas. But again, because it's something that if I did make it, we would probably keep it for a while and like use it. I wanted to put a lot of effort into it and make it look nice. And I just felt like I didn't have the time. It felt overwhelming. But I do think that that's something that you could easily do, or even just making puppets with your, you know, for yourself or with your kids or whatever, I think would pair really nicely with this book because they play a little bit. They play a fairly central role just in like her story of learning what she's good at and like the storytelling aspect of her journey.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So those were our ideas. And now we're going to move on to the rest of Claudie's collection. We did go over a lot of it last time, probably a little more than half, I would say. We have a few things left. So Katie just went over the bakery, which I agree is really a cool set. Like, I'm so torn about getting it or not because I have almost everything else from her collection and I'm just like, oh, do I need that too? But it's so, I'm sure it's so big.
I'm sure it is. But the American Girl food is just always so quality. This is maybe a bold statement so early in our podcast, but this might be one of my favorite accessory sets of all time.
Okay, you're just like convincing me.
I know. I'm so sorry.
The next time there's like a big sale at American Girl, maybe I'll need to make the purchase. Because I do feel like it's one that I don't know if I'd want to try to get secondhand because it'd be so hard to get all the pieces, I feel like.
And I feel like you could wait a little until Veda's older and not have a lot of choking hazards because there are, I think, a lot of small, like there's pennies, nickels, quarters, like all, those all come with this set. So just a lot of small, I think, choking hazards if you do have little kids.
Yes.
And are considering this.
That's a good point. Exactly. All right. I'm going to show you some of the stuff. So I do not have that. There's a couple other things I don't have, which we'll discuss too. But I did bring a few things with me. We are at work again today, but I carried them up and they all fit in one bag. So I'm going to show Katie a few of the things I have left. And this is the first one. I actually just got this because it was on sale. So if you want to take a look.
Oh my gosh. I never had any of these. So I am looking at Miss Dizzy Dot, which is Claudie's dog. So she is so fluffy. And she comes, I don't know what type of dog she is, honestly, but she comes with like a little pink bow in her hair, which I used to put my dog's hair in a bow all the time and he would get so mad. And yeah, so this is just so cute. I've never seen any of the American Girl doll dogs. And this one in particular is so fluffy.
Yeah, like, he's
it has so much fur.
He's very sweet. We did recently post a picture of Claudie with her dog. So if you're curious, it is on our Instagram, which is again at American Girl Unboxed. And I agree, I've never had any of the pets. And it's not something that I necessarily was trying to collect, but when I've heard people talk about them, they say how like they're actually pretty good quality.
Yeah.
Like they're slightly firmer than
a normal
a stuffy.
Yeah.
And there's some, I felt some that were like actually hard. So I went to the American Girl sale that was in Saline, Michigan a month ago-ish. And there was a bunch of resellers there that had a lot of American Girl stuff and a lot of pets. So I got to like touch a few. And there are some that are like very firm and then others that are a little bit softer. So they kind of vary, but I feel like they're all good quality. So I do think that they're worth purchasing if that's something that you have an interest in as the pets. And I will say Dizzy Dot doesn't have like a huge part of the story.
No, but definitely cute.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to pull out the next thing. This one is very much part of the second book.
All right. So this is Claudie's travel outfit. So it's that white dress with the blue polka dots. It's got a blue bow at the collar and then a straw hat with a blue bow. These brown boots and some socks as well. And just opening it up, you can probably hear the paper here. The hat is so cute. Like it just perfect straw hat. It definitely looks like that emoji in the Apple emoji icons. And then her dress is just so cute too. It's a different material than I was kind of expecting, but it's just so like quality. And then I love the little cuffs at the sleeves.
I will say 10 mine.
10 out of 10. Cute dress.
It is very cute. Mine needs an ironing. And I did put it on Samantha, and it is also on her Instagram. There's like a picture from Samantha Saves the Day. Since I don't have her midi outfit, I put her in this instead since it's somewhat similar. And also we knew we would be doing Claudie, so we thought it'd be a fun little Easter egg. But Samantha didn't look super great in it because I think that, you know, Samantha has that pleasant body, pleasant company body, which is a lot thicker. And so it was a little bit tight. And so I'm curious. I didn't think it looked that great on her. So I'm curious to put it on Claudia. I bet it will look a little bit better on Claudia.
I also feel like it's just slightly different enough from Samantha's collection that it looks slightly off.
Yeah.
Like, it is not pleated. It's not like a stiff dress. Like, I think of Samantha's collection as kind of more stiff, whereas this one's honestly more reminiscent of like a dress you would see today.
Yeah, I agree. It wasn't a perfect match, that's for sure. I need the midi outfit as well.
Samantha's also just not a blue color girl.
Yeah, that's true. Like. Yeah, I think she has like her bathing suit is, but it's like a very, yeah. It's like a jean color, like, blue.
Yes.
Like a dark blue.
Navy.
All right, and then this I think is so cool. I'm handing over to Katie the travel accessories, which I think when I'm watching reviews of people talk about Claudia, like different adult doll collectors, a lot of them are mentioning this specific set and how much they like it.
It is very quality just from even opening up the box. Like, the suitcase is very heavy duty. All right, I want this suitcase. It's so cute. It's like a brown suitcase with a yellow inside. She's got a little striped, like, toiletry bag. And then it comes with a cute little mirror, a butterfly pin, which is so adorable for her hair. And it's kind of got like a pick, like, comb entry.
It's similar, the butterfly one, for those of you who have Josefina, it's similar to the piece that goes with her veil for her Christmas outfit, although it's a little bit less sturdy than Josefina's. Josefina's is a little more heavy duty, but it's kind of similar vibes to that.
And then last time we also mentioned this, but Madam CJ Walker had a line of toiletry and hair care things. So she's got Madam CJ Walker's complexion and toilet soap, which actually has soap inside.
Yeah.
It's a very heavy box.
If you open it, it's actual soap.
That's amazing.
Yes. And that, to me, like, that is what American Girl is all about, should be about, right? Is like these quality pieces that really just like
are detailed.
They're detailed. And I think that's really what catches your imagination as a kid, is like these miniature things that feel real versus little plastic things that it doesn't have
and
the same.
Easily could have put a box in here and just called it good.
Yeah.
But there's actually soap inside. And then she's got Madam CJ Walker's wonderful hair grower as well. And that's like a little tin with, again, like fake soap in, or fake cream inside. And so it unscrews. And then there is a little rose tooth powder. So toothpaste, essentially.
So Lush has something similar. I was thinking they had powder. I don't know if they used to have powder, but they have toothpaste tabs, which I have tried one. You put it in your mouth, you like chew it up, and then you like brush your
teeth.
Let
it foam. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting, to say the least. So it's worth trying, but I bet powder would be a similar vibe if you were using that. Okay. I do have, let's see, two more outfits. I am missing a couple of things again, which we'll talk about, but I have most of it, but here's the other two. Now, these two are part of a collection called Inspired By. So they are outfits that were created by a designer inspired by Claudia's books and Claudia's time, but not necessarily supposed to be historically accurate.
Part of her story.
Yeah. And also not 20s necessarily, but inspired by the 20s.
Yeah. And I think Nellie's got an Irish dance costume that's very similar.
Yeah. That costume is very cute. So Katie is first looking at, oh, it's never been opened before. No, Katie's like, I'm not doing it.
I'm not opening it.
Okay. It doesn't, I'll open it one sec.
Got to give Grace the honors of opening her own stuff.
Okay. We got it opened.
Got it open. All right. So this is Claudia's sparkly skirt and fur trim top. So again, not like real 1920s, but very much inspired by it. So it's a black sequined top and it's got like champagne sequins on it. And then like champagne fur outlining along the neckline and then the sleeves. And then it's like a silky champagne skirt with sequins on it as well. And that's very pleated. And then her bow and tights are both black sequins as well. And the bow has like a champagne button at the top, and then there's black Mary Janes as well. This one is super cute, and I feel like honestly this kind of goes better with her dance costume to me. Like, I would have expected this to be her dance costume versus the one that she actually comes with.
Yeah, and a lot of people are actually repurposing it to also be her winter outfit because she doesn't have one. She has her winter coat.
It's very Christmassy, wintery,
yeah,
as well.
So I've seen a lot of people dress her for that. I will say this is one that I didn't really love the images. But then when I saw other collectors put her in it and like, you know, videos of her, I think she looks super cute. And it kind of like the jazz outfit. Like, I think it just is really adorable on her.
the images don't do the shininess justice, yeah. I feel like. So in person, it's better. And then, yeah, it's very New Year's Eve
yeah.
type of vibe. So I can definitely see where people would like repurpose it for her winter outfit.
Yes, me too. Now, there are three outfits in this line. I have two of the three. One had already sold out, and these two were on like a super... These three outfits weren't my absolute favorite, and they didn't come with her Claudie's bundle. So I just like wasn't going to get them. But there was a super deep... It was like the 70% outlets thing that American Girl does. I don't know if it was quite 70%, but it was like over 50% off that I got these. And so I was like, well, you know what? I might as well because I have most of her collection. So these are the two things that... These two and Dizzy Dot, I think, are the three things that I've bought for Claudie on like kind of deep discounted sales that didn't come with her bundle. And the third... The two of the three outfits were available. So I do have... And this is my favorite one.
I was going to say, I was hoping it was this one because I want to see it in person.
It's the glitzy sequin gown and capelet outfit. I do think it's super beautiful. And I've seen a lot of people actually use it to make Taylor Swift outfits.
Oh, absolutely.
For Life of a Showgirl. So let me open it up because it is also sealed. And I will hand it over to Katie.
And I do have to say, all three in this collection are very cute as well. Because the one you don't have, the jazzy flapper and fur coat outfit, is also so cute. And that's also in her Inspired By collection. It's more of like a teal sequined dress with a white fur coat, a blue bow, and then she's got actually sandals with that one. And that one's very 1920s feeling, and it also feels like it would easily fit into her collection.
Yeah, if for those of you familiar with Melody's collection, I always get it confused with Melody's doo-wop outfit. They're kind of similar vibes.
Very similar vibes.
It is very cute. And so, honestly, I'm probably going to end up getting it secondhand. Yeah. Like, of course I have to. But bringing us back to the third and final in this line that I do own, Katie, go ahead. And I did open it up, and you can take a look.
All right. So I have the dress out, and it's the most gold sequined thing I've ever seen in my life. So it comes with like a sleeveless dress with a little skirt on it. And it's actually a leotard now that I'm looking at it. So it's like a leotard with a little gold skirt. And then it comes with a cape with a silver lining or sequined lining. It also comes with these gold sandals that are very shiny and sparkly. And then my favorite part is the headband, which... If anybody knows who Hedy Lamarr is, she is actually like a Hollywood kind of icon. And I think she was leader on in the 1920s. But there's an image of her with like a star crown that's very similar to this. And it's like one of my favorite like images from that time frame. It's just very iconic. And I feel like it's a great costume piece. So if you look that up, maybe we'll post a picture of it. I don't know. But very similar. And this is just such a fun costume. I want the headband. I don't know where I'd wear it, but I want it.
Yeah, I feel like with this one, actually with this one and the, what is it called? The jazzy flapper and fur coat outfit. They both do feel, to me, very 20s. And I'm sure it's sort of the more costumed version of the 20s, but I think they fit very well. I will say I think that her sparkly skirt and fur trim top outfit does feel a little more modern to me. Like, I think that that's something that I could see a truly me also having the same exact outfit other than maybe the headpiece.
That one feels even like a little bit 40s or 50s to me.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. But again, these I think are not meant to be perfectly accurate. They're just inspired.
They're just fun.
Yeah. I will say I watched Lady. So I mentioned this YouTuber. And when we were covering Samantha, her name is Lady Rebecca Fashions, and she covered Claudie as well. And I honestly don't remember the details of exactly what she said, other than like the summary was that a lot of her pieces aren't super historically accurate. So I think Claudie's collection, I think they did do overall a good job, and I really like it. I feel like there's some good quality there, but you know, we're not historians. Perhaps it's not the most accurate, but I think it's all very cute.
Very cute, even if it's not the best representation.
Yes. Okay. And then I think the only thing we have left to talk about is something that I'm sort of kicking myself about because, so remember when I mentioned the bundle that I got from Facebook Marketplace?
Yes.
So Claudie's bed was also in the bundle, but it was just like a little bit I was trying to get a deal, you know, I was trying to negotiate a bit. So I was like, hey, like, this is what I can pay. Like, does that work? And they're like, well, if we don't throw in the bed, we'll take that. And so I was like, okay, fine. So I got a little bit of a better deal, but I did not get the bed. And I kind of was thinking, you know, the beds are big anyway, and I have such a small space, but I think it is so cute. So basically Claudie's bed is like a sort of a periwinkle color, and it has just like a half circle headboard and baseboard. And it's this really pretty purpley blue color. Mm-hmm. And then it has like a really beautiful white simple blanket on top that has flowers on it that are also that same sort of color with some pink. And then it has pink pillows. And I just think I really like the color scheme. I think it's very simple and pretty. And now I'm just like, oh, I should have just got it.
I was really spoiled as a kid. I never had any of the American Girl specific beds, but 1 year for Christmas, this must have been the first year we all got a doll, because my grandparents made myself and my two sisters each a set of bunk beds for our dolls.
That's awesome.
And it's very similar to this Claudie set, I feel like, with the detail that's in it, because it's got very spindled bunk bed legs, and then they're all painted like these very muted like pastel colors, and so it just very much reminds me of Claudie's. My grandma sewed all the bedding for the bunk beds, and then my grandpa actually like woodworked them, so we do still have those. The one thing that we absolutely could not and would not get rid of, and I'm very lucky to have those, because they're honestly a family heirloom.
That's
like, that is passing down generations.
I was just gonna say that's heirloom right there.
Yes,
which I do think a lot of people would consider American Girl in general, but obviously it's so much more meaningful and special if it was made by a loved one.
Yes,
that's awesome.
And I think mine is like a sage greeny color, which I love. It's so perfect.
You'll need to dig it out.
Yes.
Now that you...
I know. Now I'm going to have to.
You may or may not
have... When I go to my parents' house next, I'm going to have to bring the bunk bed back.
Yes. I would love that. All right. Well, I think that wraps up everything with Claudie. Overall, I think we can both say we really liked it, because if you combine our scores, 4.5 for the book is what we both would have given for the two books. And then what would you say... I'm just curious. Claudie as a doll, like, how would you rate her 1 to 5? Like, 5 being, and this is like kind of compared to other dolls, so like 5 being the cutest mm-hmm. doll you've ever seen from American Girl, and 1 being whatever doll you think is the least
cute. I don't know if there's any doll that I would classify as a 1. I would say 4.5, and the only reason I'm saying 4.5 versus 5 is because I, again, I've talked about this before, loved playing with their hair. That was like how I played with my dolls. And so her hair I just wouldn't want to touch, because it's in these perfect ringlet curls, and there's not much you can do with that without messing it up too much. So I think that's like the thing that kicks it down just a tad. But she's so beautiful. She's like a beautiful doll.
I agree. I think I would also give her a 4.5, not to copy, but because I feel like, to me, a 5, I just like, to me, nothing beats a Josefina mold. So I feel like I just like love those dolls, are my favorite. And so if those are 5 out of 5, then she has to be slightly lower. But yeah. I do think that she is adorable. And I think the Claudie mold is super cute. And her and her collection all go so well together. And I'm so happy that she was technically my first doll. Well, actually, no, Josefina. They're both the first two dolls that I've had in my house, Josefina and Claudie. But I don't consider them mine, because they are both in my head Vedas.
Yes.
So,
yeah. But I'm so glad we did Claudie as a second historical character. I'm really excited to dive further into this line, because there's some that I feel like I remember from being a kid, like Josefina. I loved her and her stories. Mm-hmm. I don't remember them. And so I think just starting fresh with like a new historical character, a new story, and loving it so much gives me a lot of hope for going through the rest of them.
Same. I'm super excited. Well, thank you. And thank you to everyone who has listened. We hope you tune into a future episode soon.